This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. I hope you're doing well, and I'm grateful for your company. Stay tuned. In the next half hour, we'll bring you stories that approach the Atlantic Coast Pipeline from different angles. And that includes an encore look from the skies at the proposed route of the pipeline with the Pipeline Air Force. We'll also have a look at why the feds are getting involved in the effort to build a mosque in Culpeper County and new state money for mental health treatment for inmates at a few select jails and prisons, including one in our area. We'll hear all of that in the next half hour. But first, the South River and the South Fork of the Shenandoah River have struggled with a legacy of industrial mercury pollution. Since the late 1920s, more than 100 miles of river and floodplain have been contaminated with mercury since then. This year, the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality approved a plan to begin remediating and restoring contaminated riverbanks. And just this week, the Justice Department announced a settlement with DuPont over that contamination. WMRA's Kara Lofton reports on the new restoration efforts.
We are standing outside Constitution Park in Waynesboro.
So this is a good place to stop and take a look at, that's the actual former DuPont plant, now Invista plant.
Michael Liberati is the project director for DuPont. He manages remediation projects like this one for the industrial giant all over the country. Here on the bank of the South River, Liberati is overseeing a project to replant vegetation on riverbanks laced with mercury so it doesn't continue to leach into the water. On this stretch, though, one of the most contaminated on the whole river, the soil has to be removed first. He points at two smokestacks in the distance.
So that's the area that the original input of mercury from the plant to the river occurred.
For decades, the DuPont plant here made rayon. Mercury was used as a catalyst in the production, although that practice was discontinued in 1950. In the late 1970s, a DuPont construction team noticed high mercury levels in the soil around the factory. The next year, the Virginia Department of Health issued a fish consumption ban for more than 100 miles of stream bank, stretching from Waynesboro to Front Royal. In the 1980s, the ban was lifted to an advisory. Experts thought that over time, the level of mercury in fish tissue would improve on its own. It didn't. The problem?
There is a continuing source of mercury input into the river.
Now, they're trying to fix it. Construction began here the first week of November. Liberati says the project is expected to take 2 to 3 months to complete, much less time than it took for all the stakeholders to approve the plan.
Well, I think the earliest proposals, we were kind of startled in that they called for a lot of excavation of soils along the riverbanks.
That's James Shaw, deputy manager for the city of Waynesboro.
Ultimately, I think our concerns, you know, were severalfold. One was that the loss of riparian buffers and established tree stands and the effect that it would have on aquatic habitat and that sort of thing in the river, as well as the aesthetic impact along the river.
Waynesboro is trying to reinvent itself from an industrial town to a tourist town. So Shaw says preserving existing assets like the urban trout fishery and boat access points is extremely important to officials, especially because physical contact with the contaminated soil isn't that big of a deal from a health perspective. It's really just the fish.
So that's our ultimate goal, is to reduce the levels in fish until that risk has been eliminated or significantly reduced.
That's Vince Maiden, RCRA Corrective Action Project Manager for the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality. RCRA is a program that investigates and oversees the cleanup of hazardous waste.
Since we've become involved, it's been fast-moving from a regulatory perspective, and we're happy to see there's some action on the river and some steps being taken to remove the contamination and protect human health and the environment.
But local officials eye the huge cleanup with a mixed sense of approval and caution.
I think our concern at some level gets to be that we recognize that the mercury contamination has had effects on habitat, but we also are concerned that, you know, is the cure worse than the disease at some level?
Shaw is referring to the scale of the project and the impact that it will have on the beauty of land that encompasses both private and public property. This is the first stage of construction on the remediation project. About 70 meters of riverbank are being excavated here because this is where the pollution is most pronounced.
The excavated area will be backfilled first with a layer of biochar.
What is that?
It's hardwood that has been fired at low temperature to form something akin to charcoal, but we've done a lot of research on it, and we found that it has properties to attenuate and to lock in mercury. So it's a kind of like a belt and suspenders approach, in that while we are excavating the majority of mercury, any residual mercury that may be there will be tied up by the biochar.
They will then use a capping technique that includes replanting the riverbank with native vegetation. This capping technique will be used on the rest of the banks without excavation. The land they are currently working on is actually still owned by DuPont. As they move downriver, they will have to work with the city and private landowners to be granted access to the banks. A large-scale private-public remediation partnership, Maiden says, may be unique in Virginia. For WMRA News, I'm Kara Lofton.
The Justice Department announced on Thursday that DuPont has agreed to a proposed $50 million settlement with the Commonwealth of Virginia and the Departments of Justice and the Interior. The Department of Justice statement says that the settlement will, quote, compensate the public for the natural resource injuries and losses in ecological and recreational services. In addition to a cash payment of just over $42 million, DuPont will fund significant renovations at the Front Royal Fish Hatchery, estimated to cost up to $10 million. The settlement terms are outlined in a proposed consent decree filed in federal court in Harrisonburg on Thursday. And you'll find a link to that announcement by the Justice Department at WMRA.org. Now to another ongoing story that touches on the environment, energy, and property rights, and the economy and jobs. Dominion hosted a construction expo in Fishersville on December the 8th to garner support and highlight employment opportunities for area workers and communities along the controversial Atlantic Coast Pipeline's route. WMRA's Jesse Nadler reports.
The Augusta Expo in Fishersville was full of burly men in Carhartt coats, ball caps, and work boots on Thursday. Trades and craftsmen turned out to learn more about how to get a job working on the proposed Atlantic Coast Pipeline.
We're going to need laborers. We're going to need pipe fitters. We're going to need people who are able to weld. We're going to need electricians.
Matthew Yonka is the president of the Virginia State Building and Construction Trades Council, a group that represents unions throughout the state. He was on hand to take applications from workers interested in the project.
It's important that people know that it's not just people who are already trained in those areas, but also people who don't have any training at all. We're willing to bring those folks in, give them a good job with good pay, good benefits, and then train them on top of that.
Spring Ridge Constructors was selected by Dominion as the lead contract for the natural gas pipeline. It's comprised of four national pipeline construction companies. The plan is to subcontract at the local level for each leg of the project. Dominion estimates that approximately 7,200 construction workers will be needed during peak construction, with 50% of the craft and trade workers hired through local unions. They anticipate the project will generate $2.7 billion in economic activity.
We're specialized welders, orbital welding.
Daniel Hatter came out to make face-to-face contact with construction reps and register his services online.
We'd help build the compressor stations or any sub-assemblies or mainline transmission line.
I asked him what it would mean to get hired.
Well, what it would mean is we'd get to put a lot of people in Virginia to work as a contractor. I'm a member of Local Union 10, Roanoke, Virginia. We'd be able to take some of our membership and do a lot of the work that's coming through here. And once the pipeline's in, any of the substations or compressor stations have continual employment on there doing maintenance. That's the kind of work as a contractor we're looking for.
Crafts and tradesmen aren't the only ones who might benefit from the project. Jerry Connor, an operating engineer union member, explains.
We're going to need a lot of straw, because when this thing is over with, we've got to take and make it like nothing ever happened. So a lot of these farmers might have hundreds and hundreds of bales of straw. Usually it's no good for bedding for their animals, but they can sell it here, because we'll be using a lot of that kind of stuff.
The pipeline, which is still pending regulatory approval, remains controversial. No pipeline, signs, or a common site in Augusta County, where the pipeline is supposed to cut a 55-mile swath, more than any other region in the state. So in some ways, the expo represents a counter-narrative to all the protests over the past year. When asked if they're concerned about pushback from the wider community, almost all of the tradesmen I spoke to gave an emphatic no.
Not at all. I think it's a great thing. But it's the safest way to move this product. And, you know, everybody wants nice automobiles and nice clothes. Guess what? It's all made out of petroleum.
Still, some understand why this natural gas pipeline is controversial, given the reputation of pipelines nationwide that carry petroleum products.
It's a necessary evil.
This gentleman is a retired crane operator who's worked on pipelines in the past. He asked not to give his name.
You're going to have oil spills. You're going to have a blow up of a pipeline somewhere or another sometime. You see it on the news all the time. But you have to have infrastructure. If you don't, you're going to be stagnant. And that's what our country is right now. We're stagnant. But I don't want a pipeline in my backyard.
Pending regulatory approval, construction of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is set to begin late next year. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
Meanwhile, opposition to a proposed component of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline continues downstream, as it were, in Buckingham County. Last Monday night, more than 150 people packed into the Buckingham County Board of Supervisors' monthly meeting. Most were there to voice their objection to the compressor station being sought as part of the proposed pipeline. WMRA's Jordy Yeager was there.
On Monday night, more than 150 people packed into the Buckingham County Board of Supervisors' monthly meeting. Most were there to voice their objection to the compressor station being sought as part of the proposed Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Dominion Power is asking Buckingham County for a special use permit to install a station that would compress the natural gas as it flows through the proposed pipeline from the fracking fields of West Virginia to utility customers in North Carolina. Last month, over much objection, the Buckingham County Planning Commission voted unanimously to recommend the permit's approval. The Board of Supervisors will make the ultimate decision. The station would bring the county nearly $9 million in tax revenue over 8 years. On Monday night, more than a dozen area residents spoke out against the health and environmental pitfalls that a compressor station could bring. Paul Wilson is a pastor at the nearby Union Hill Baptist Church. In October, Wilson was arrested in Richmond after protesting in front of the governor's mansion. Governor Terry McAuliffe supports the pipeline's construction.
Every county, city, town, and state needs money. I need money. My church needs money. But I'm sure wouldn't sell my soul to gain the whole world just for money. So I would like to suggest to you that you be careful of who you go to bed with.
Supervisors voted on Monday to hold a public hearing on the issue in 3 weeks, on Thursday, January 5th at 6 p.m. For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
One group of opponents to the proposed Atlantic Coast Pipeline has been taking to the skies. 2 Decembers ago, WMRA's Andrew Jenner went along for the ride with a group calling itself the Pipeline Air Force, and he also got Dominion's view from the ground.
Clear.
Clear below 1,000 temperature, okay. 10 Celsius, dew point.
The air's a little rough, but the view is magnificent from a few thousand feet above the Shenandoah Valley. Michael Godfrey steers his tiny plane, an M7 Mall, west across Augusta County, through Jennings Gap and up over Shenandoah Mountain, following a line on his GPS that traces the proposed route of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. A consortium led by Dominion, one of the country's largest energy companies, is proposing the 550-mile pipeline to transport natural gas from West Virginia to Virginia and North Carolina. Frank Mack is communications manager for Dominion Transmission, a subsidiary that would build the pipeline.
There's a huge need for additional natural gas infrastructure. It's going to help companies like Duke Energy and Dominion Virginia Power with meeting new air emission regulations because they're going to be replacing a lot of their coal plants with natural gas.
In and around the valley, this would be a 42-inch line. That's big, bigger even than the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. And its potential impacts on things like property values and the environment have gotten a lot of people very worked up.
I care about the fact that it's coming through my community and that it will be impacting private property and lifetime investments of the people that live there.
Rick Webb is a retired environmental scientist from the University of Virginia who lives in Highland County, a few miles from the proposed route. He's also a coordinator of the Dominion Pipeline Monitoring Coalition, made up of a dozen organizations opposed to the project.
I also care about what it's going to do to the ecosystems in the area, and in particular in the national forest. It's a real intrusion into lands that we've set aside to protect and maintain for our children and their children and so forth.
In October, Dominion filed its first documents with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the agency with ultimate oversight of the pipeline. Dominion hopes to start building it in 2016 and start using it by the end of 2018.
We're looking to make the best route with the least impact to the environment, the cultural, and historical resources.
Here's the problem. People like Webb say that whatever this least impact is, it'll still be too much for this special place.
The route that they've chosen through the National Forest and through some of our wild landscape has been about as bad as you could conceive. The pipeline cuts right through the areas that will be the last refuge of the brook trout, of a number of mountain salamanders and other species, bats, birds, etc. We're talking about a very poor choice for a place to put a pipeline, some of the best of what remains and some of the best of what will remain in a changing world.
The two sides simply disagree on what's possible. With careful planning, Dominion says, the pipeline can coexist with these mountain ecosystems.
We've met with technical staffs from both the Monongahela and the George Washington National Forest multiple times. They've made us aware of certain areas that they would really want us to avoid. For example, in the George Washington National Forest, there's the cow knob salamander. So they made us aware of where that salamander generally lives. So those are the kind of things that we're going to try to avoid.
But to Webb, that's trying to have cake and eat it too.
They cannot bring a pipeline through the central Allegheny Highlands without significant damage to the environment.
If the Pipeline Monitoring Coalition fails at its main goal of blocking the project altogether, they'll do everything they can to make sure it's built according to the precise letter of every applicable law. They point to a recent Dominion project in West Virginia as an example of why this is a concern. Between October 2012 and March 2013, state regulators documented at least 16 violations of water quality laws on 9 different streams during the construction of a small pipeline called the G-150 in the state's northern panhandle. Last October, Dominion signed a draft consent order requiring it to fix all the problems and pay a $55,000 fine. Max says that sort of thing is the exception, not the rule.
Dominion works hard to comply with all environmental rules and regulations, and in this instance, we did not meet our own expectations. We agree with the administrative consent order from the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, and we are working with the state to resolve all the issues and will implement all requirements of that consent order to ensure it doesn't happen again on future projects.
If the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is approved, he adds, it'll be subject to oversight from dozens of local, state, and federal agencies. That's little comfort, though, to Webb and others who don't have confidence in those regulatory agencies either. Which brings us back to Michael Godfrey and his airplane.
I've never seen that before. Let's check it out. We'll check it out.
Godfrey is one of 4 pilots that have mustered to form the Pipeline Air Force, the aerial branch of the Pipeline Monitoring Coalition.
The idea is to establish an unprecedented level of observation and surveillance for the construction and maintenance of this pipeline if it occurs. The prospective contractors who build this pipeline for Dominion need to understand that they are going to be held to the letter of the law.
In the meantime, they're also lining up the legal team to help compel enforcement of those laws, if it ever comes to that. And so, the Air Force and the rest of the Pipeline Monitoring Coalition aren't just taking on Dominion, widely regarded as the most powerful economic and political entity in Virginia. They're also going up against Virginia itself, and they're ready to take the fight to the skies.
It is a David and Goliath kind of idea. Some may consider it quixotic, but you have to do what you can in behalf of your way of life and your community.
Sure, Deanna Potter, Shelter, what's your position, please, sir?
For WMRA News, I'm Andrew Jenner.
1 mile upwind, we'll be departing to the southeast.
Now to Culpeper County, northeast of the Charlottesville area, where officials are headed to federal court to defend themselves against charges they violated the civil rights of Muslims. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has the story.
Back in April, members of the Culpeper County Board of Supervisors were considering a pretty unremarkable item, a pump and haul permit to empty wastewater. But this particular permit was filed by the Islamic Center of Culpeper, which caused some concern in the community. Supervisor Sue Hansen responded this way.
Our policy doesn't give us the right to turn someone down because of religion.
But Supervisor William Chase made a motion to deny the permit, saying these kinds of permits should be limited to specific situations, like a warehouse where facilities are rarely used.
So that's the kind of emergency that it's designed for. Not for a commercial or church use or purpose like that. For that's the reason I can't support it. Now,
Now the Department of Justice is suing the supervisors, and Kevin Welsh at the University of Richmond Law School says,
assuming that the county denies the allegations, then you'll ultimately have some discovery to figure out what was really going on.
Federal prosecutors say they want Culpepper to reconsider the permit and this time refrain from discrimination. I'm Michael Pope.
Virginia has awarded $3.5 million in grants to six regional jails, including Middle River, to provide mental health services. Officials hope to address the underlying cause of crimes to keep inmates from coming back after they're released. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman has more on that story.
Experts figure one in four people locked up in a local or regional jail has some sort of mental illness. Virginia's Secretary of Public Safety, Brian Moran, says six new pilot projects will address that problem through anger management and other forms of behavior modification.
Many of these individuals have suffered some traumatic experience, either mental or physical abuse, and so a lot of it has to deal with their underlying causes.
He adds that treating mental problems will make Virginia safer in the long run by keeping people from committing new crimes.
If we look at the recidivism rate for those who have mental illness and those who do not, there's about an 8% difference. So you're more likely to recidivate, commit another crime, thus creating yet another victim if you have mental illness. If we can address that mental illness, that will make our community safer.
And Moran argues investing in mental health services will save the state money, since it costs, on average, $28,000 a year to keep someone in a state prison. The grants will go to Chesterfield County, Richmond City, Prince William Manassas, Hampton Roads, Middle River, and Western Virginia Regional Jails. I'm Sandy Hausman.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to learn more about how we fund our news and how you can help, go to WMRA.org, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. Find all of our stories from the newsroom at WMRA.org, and be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio, and follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you after Christmas. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and happy holidays.